This episode of The Slow Good Life is brought to you by Slow Talk Podcasting, a turnkey recording studio featuring podcast development, production, distribution, and marketing. Check out Slow Talk Podcasting online at slowtalkpodcasting.com or call them at 805-234-5056.
So you got an extra 200 toxic, proven carcinogenic chemicals to digest. And that is why, folks, that this country, the first time in history, for the last 3 years, the life expectancy has declined.
Welcome to another episode of The Slow Good Life. James Davis here in the studio with Craig Marshall and Joseph Goodwin and our special guest today, Gary Conway. Gary, welcome back to Slow Talk Studios.
Thank you. We spent a few very fine hours here, very creative hours.
You actually were the start when we launched this and we did live on video YouTube and Instagram and all kinds of fun stuff. Well, Gary, you being a resident of San Luis Obispo County for how many years now?
It's almost too hard. I hate to say it, then it indicates what age I am. And that's the only area that I lie about all the time.
Yeah. The only problem is there's something called Google and they show your cards.
It's worse than ever. Yeah, they know. Yeah. So, but it's been close to 50 years, believe it or not. Not that I've lived here, but I discovered here.
Yeah. That's way back earlier than most folk, right?
It was, and I have to point this out all the time, it was when Paso Robles didn't have a vine. They had the old Zinfandels, you would notice. But anyone who came to Paso Robles was totally unaware.
That would have been the old Pazenti.
That's right. Right. Which is still there. That it was, in fact, the Pazenti winery at that time didn't even have wine. When you went there, they had, crazy things like pineapple wine.
Whatever. Oh, yeah.
They didn't make wine from these old Zinfandel grapes.
Did you ever get their jug wine?
We used to get whatever was there.
By the gallon?
Right. But it was the not a vine to be seen. I point that out, that until I started with Justin, which was not long ago, but it's not long ago as the French started several thousand years ago, or the Greeks, or the Romans, or even Napa 150, 200 years ago. We started just a few decades ago and have become unchallengeable, not even close, the greatest wine area in the history of the world. Nothing comes close. And I'm talking not out of love. I'm talking about a sheer science. You go down the list of all of the attributes you have to make the noble wine, the great wine. This has it. And most of the other areas now have zero.
And Gary, for our listeners, you are a winemaker. Carmody McKnight is your winery.
Yeah, I always hate that term winemaker. I think we're all winemakers. We had, at one point, all of us coming from our backgrounds, all had to make wine to live. And the thing about wine is that it's should be made. It's just pressing grape and making wine and then drinking it. My very first memory in life is go down to my Sicilian grandfather's cellar in Boston and bring up the wine he made for the family.
Yep.
So whether he made it, my uncle made it, or her grandfather, everybody can make wine. They're not making wine today. Mm-hmm. What they're doing today is making a concoction out of chemicals that has nothing to do with wine.
And we're going to delve into that because your property, the Carmody McKnight Estate, your property produces one of the few or only wines in California without traces of glycophosphate.
First of all, it's the only sizable or commercial non-GMO.
There we go.
Wine in the Western world. That's a startling statement.
It's huge.
I mean, if anybody in the audience, go away and think about, have a glass of wine and think about that statement.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have to ask why. I'm not going to get into that now, but the why is a fascinating story worthy of an important documentary.
And, of course, Gary Conway, a lot of people may recognize Gary through Burke's Law.
Well, how do you recognize on the radio?
Well, the name Gary Conway. But you know what,
Gary? I thought we were suddenly being filmed. I'm licking my lips, so I don't.
Well, we're not live. We can do a little video clips and stuff. But Gary Conway and, of course, Land of the Giants. And
well, give the audience a little chance to look me up. At least look at my picture while we're talking.
Yeah, Wikipedia.
Yeah. IMDb, Internet Movie Database.
There we go, yes.
The trouble with those now, though, they have some Yeah, that's another. When we were doing, when I was with Warner Brothers on the contract, and in those series, they had these phenomenal photographers. And when you took a photograph, that we didn't have an iPhone or any of that stuff, you went into their studio, the lights, you give these great pictures,
yeah,
which I have. And the people now come into the winery with their iPhones. Can I take a picture? And then I've taken them, and they all look like whatever. And I said, you can take this. And I have one of my really good pictures nearby. And I said, if you can take a picture like that,
that's okay.
We'll take a picture.
I love
but
it.
But if it's going to be some crappy thing with this, and they usually get on the internet. So intermixed with your good pictures are these real teenage Frankenstein.
Well, Gary, I know health, you know, the slow good life. We look at the slow good life and what that is. And health is very important to you as an individual. You walked in the door today, and Gary, I shake a lot of hands in my job. That grip, oh my gosh, I'm not going to cross you in any way, shape, or form.
I never thought of that.
Are you pruning?
No.
You don't prune? No.
No, but I'm not pruning currently, right? Hmm. Right. You know, when you talk that you consider health, I've taken several surveys, and I've probably asked 300 to 400 people, because I ask this one question all the time. So, and I'll ask you here, what is more important, your health, being healthy, well-being, or being a billionaire? No one has ever told me I'd rather be a billionaire. And so what's the most important is health. Yet in all civilization, we at this time in this country are the most ignorant about health and how to keep our health than any time in human history. My grandmother went through barely the fifth grade, knew how to protect your body. And when I got pneumonia at age 5, which was the death sentence in Boston at that time, she knew how to cure me. It happened to be with Sicilian olive oil. Over 3 days, she did that. And she was never sick a day in her life. That whole family never had cancer, never had a dementia, never
had Explain anything. The connection to the olive oil.
Well, the olive oil, we've known through history. If you, audience, listen, please, if you're not taking real olive oil every day of your life, 2 or 3 times, you are hopelessly ignorant, as we all are in this country.
Real olive oil is?
Well, real olive oil means coming. When you buy olive oil in the market, and there's no law against it, it is fake. It's canola oil.
There are a lot of anything. Fake. There are a lot of fake olive oils.
Well, not only that, but then instead of olive oil being healthy, it is very destructive, because no one, and you have to look it up, should be drinking or get close to anything called vegetable oil. Because if you look it up again, these are look-upable. These aren't Gary Conway spouting out. This is something you can now look. You'll find that these oils are made with petroleum.
I was just going to say, right now, the hope that I have, I'm an optimist. I really like to lean into the future and look for good. Life, in my estimation, is somewhat bittersweet. I look for the sweet. With that said, on the horizon, the information, like you say, is right instantly at our fingertips. So it really behooves us to take advantage and to dig and to look for the good.
The problem is that it comes in a tidal wave of other information. You got to be able to pull it out.
Also, it comes in a tidal wave of misinformation.
Exactly.
And we have a country and a civilization, a society that wants you unhealthy.
Yeah.
You don't make money.
They want the big crescendo. The preventative is really been kept back.
Now, you started me on a little path here. We talked about real olive oil. And what is the right dosage per day? And where do you get it?
As much as you can. No, I'm serious. In my Italian family, who, by the way, are being studied, my mother, her brothers, and aunts, and I grew up with them. And my 80-year-old uncle could beat the crap out of me when I was 16. Mm. They didn't have an ounce of fat on them. They were strong. Sicilian Italians, right. And they're being studied by Harvard and Boston University to this day. Why? Because they were lean, all of them, living up through 100. They never had cancer, never had dementia, never had a damn thing. And also, and we got to remember, audience, listen carefully here. They ate vegetables just about a week or two of the year, because that's all they could grow at that time. We're talking about the 20s and 30s going to Boston.
Right, right.
And I spent hours with my uncle quizzing him. I was so amazed at this. And you ate what you grew. But the one thing they had to have is their Sicilian olive oil. So they would go down in Boston to the North End, and that's where they got their olive oil. And that's true. So they made their own wine and olive oil, and that's all they needed. Everything else was superfluous.
Right. Scripture that says to harm not the oil and the wine.
And if you go back and study the Roman army, that's all they cared about. And they, the Roman army, planted the olive tree and the grapevine all through Europe. And they had to, by law, by their own law set up through Rome, drink a liter of wine a day. But that was real wine, not the wine today.
Yeah.
The wine the markets are giving a dementia because they have an average bottle that you're buying out there by everybody. About 200 chemicals, 200 to 300 chemicals.
And crazy.
I can list them.
It's crazy.
I can tell you about them.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
But Gary, when people get back to their roots, oftentimes people stray, they get into trouble. You look at health in different cultures and things that they glean, and some cultures have different features, but the Italian culture with the wine and the olive oil, I happen to be very blessed to be a Girardot, my mother's maiden name. And I grew up, my grandfather, he didn't make his wine, but he went down to Mondavi and got some jug wine. But it was part of the lifestyle, but it wasn't just the food, it was the way they approached life. He died a millionaire. He didn't stress and sweat. He worked really hard. He was a metal foundry worker, but he knew how to get off work and have fun. He knew how to have family around. There's a whole lifestyle.
But when you had that jug, let me interrupt, when you had that jug wine, that was real wine.
Yes.
From that time to now, there have now been 80,000 chemicals introduced into our food and into our product.
And we wonder why cancer is.
80,000 chemicals. We are every day are absorbing one way or the other. And I'm telling you, in the audience, listen carefully. It's your life. It's your life. Mm-hmm. Not only, for me, it's not about being, you know, because I abuse stuff. But it's like being enslaved to ignorance. You know, when you're a slave, a lot of slaves left. They said, this is not right. And it's not right to be enslaved to ignorance because it's the ignorance that is making the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Statistically, $800 million this year, next year, will be more, are spent on chemicals to go into our food in this country.
Mm-hmm. Then on top of that, all the marketing dollars they spend to push it
up. This is per year. Another $700 million and more are chemicals made to overcome the damage those chemicals are doing. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That money, so when my family was growing up, there were no companies and corporations making money off that. They didn't care if my family, where they got their food, and there were no supermarkets in that day, another thing. And I go to a supermarket every day, so I'm one of the sheep, like all.
Yeah.
But the thing is, one thing is to be enslaved, which we are, to ignorance. And the other thing is not knowing it.
Bombarded with so many other outside factors, not allowing folks to focus on their health, fast-paced lives, technology. I mean, it all plays a role in that.
I was going to say, and life goes by fast now. People perceive it faster, and there's reasons as you get older, but just the world is sped up. But something else has been introduced in my life. I've got 5 kids. I now have 3 grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes to those grandparents that are listening to the Slow Good Life today, or parents. You have your prodigy. You have somebody that, God willing, will be there long after you're gone, extend. You begin to look at the world a little differently, especially with what's going on now, and it just becomes more of an impetus, more of a why. Why do I do that? And I look at those little kids. We have a 6-year-old, a 2-year-old, and about a 3-month. My heart is there, and the future of the planet is with those young people.
Well, I'm the same way. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And by the way, the proof is in the pudding. What we're just talking about, again, I say to whomever would listen, nothing you're going to do, not worrying about Iran or worrying about this president, is more important than what you're doing and putting into your body today.
Okay, let's assume somebody's listening and heard this for the first time, olive oil. Where do they start?
They have to start to educate themselves.
But give them a roadmap.
Go and look. It's very easy. I can look it up here and find out what real olive oil is. The real olive oil being made in California, and healthy olive oil, is being made on the west side of Paso Robles. I'm the first one, by the way, because of my background to actually plant the Tuscan olive tree in California, and which means the United States.
So this is connected to you all the way back to your heritage.
That's exactly correct. And the reason I did that, because at that point, you grew some olive tree. There was not really much known about that or much grown about that,
right.
The grown. And then one day somebody came into our tasting room. They had just come from Tuscany. And we were growing the mission olive from Tuscany, and opened the bottle from Tuscany, and I smelled it. And I think I told you that's how my grandmother cured me of pneumonia.
Right.
And that aroma came right back to me, and I said, my God, that is what is real olive oil.
That identifiable, yeah. Unmistakable aroma.
And my wife and I immediately started calling up nurseries, because I want some real Tuscan. And if you look it up, there's a lot of varietals. Not one to be found in all of California.
Hmm. Where did you have to go to get it, Gary?
We had a search for 2 to 3 weeks. Hmm. Finally found that McAvoy, who was the owner of the Chronicle, happened to be, I'd learned it by accident, importing some Tuscan. So Mary and I took off for like 2 days, went up there and talked and begged. And she wasn't there, but I managed to get some initial cuttings from that. And we came down and planted those. So that's the ignorance going right up to a few years ago. And had I not maybe had that olive oil into my taste room and the smell, that would have been forestalled. And there's no way I can stress how important olive oil is for your skin, for your hair, for overcoming disease. It was the only way my family overcame disease.
And Gary, even deeper than that,
By the way, the other part was very important to overcoming disease was the olive oil and the wine.
Well, I want to stay on that, but I want to say something a little deeper for our listeners, because people could hear this and maybe not relate, but I'll bring it right home. You knocked on the door. You had a question. You sought. You knocked on the door. You didn't take no for an answer. You stepped through the door to get the answer. Mm-hmm. There's something in you deeper. It may be tied into the Italian heritage, the way you were raised, but you seek things out. You don't take no for an answer. You want to find out some truth. You're on that journey right now. You haven't arrived. You're very clear about that. You said, I'm like the rest of the sheep. I go to the market. But the thing that's different, Gary, that I think is encouraging, is you keep trucking. You keep looking. You go, we can do this better. And that's part of what the Slow Good Life's all about, the life we aspire to. What are we trying to do? Now, you could have easily been fat and happy, enjoyed some wealth, a little bit of land, and not cared much about yourself or others. There's a lot of people that do that.
But the Slow Good Life, I think this is a moment of time, and we are probably the most enviable area in the world today.
Yes.
Yeah.
In many ways. When I was in China, believe me, we were. And so the Slow Good Life should be the good life of the entire planet right now. And how we relate to each other, how we're getting educated, how we're eating, how healthy we are, all that should become a model, because you have to have areas. Like if you go to Sicily today, you will find that the people don't have much disease, at least when I say today or several years ago.
Yeah.
And you can learn what they eat and learn what they believe in. And so it's important, as this program should be, that both, because there is no culture with us being able to function. I mean, if I'm sick, I'm not going to any opera or going to look at any damn painting.
Right, right.
So the people, now this has long been a belief of mine, Gary. I'm glad you hit on this. This is one of the most beautiful areas. I've had the opportunity to travel. I've been to China and some other areas. This area, California, everybody knows Monterey. They know Santa Barbara. They don't know SLO. They're finding out. And so we have this most beautiful area. Number two, we have some amenities. We have some investments here, some beautiful buildings. And
But also, let me interrupt. You can explain the beauty. See, it's not just beauty usually is an opinion. But the beauty of Paso Robles, there is no opinion on that. I crash landed. I was up in the air to look at property. Taken there by the real estate agent.
You were just on the helicopter just scouting out areas?
We saw the property we were on. At that point, it was the whole valley. Mm-hmm. We're just in his half now. And I looked out, and I saw the most beautiful vision. I saw the Santa Lucias, mm-hmm. The mighty, mighty mountain range, and then this just a bit of the sea behind, and this incredible green pasture with the deer just bounding over. And I said, my God, I've never seen anything like this. I heard the huge explosion. Wow. I could feel the helicopter going. I knew we were going to die.
Wow.
And I said, but just in case, this to myself, we live, I'm going to buy this place. I got to be a part of this.
In a split second, that went through your mind.
It was in my mind.
What, Gary, this is about 50 years, no, not about 50.
About 45, 50 years ago, okay. Almost 50. And the beauty was later explained to me by the scientists when they were studying on the property. What I fell in love was with the color. That's what Van Gogh fell in love with in Arles. That's what Gauguin. But we have a greater color. And why I say we have a greater color, all you have to do is go out. And by the way, I've painted, and have you ever heard of this? 400 paintings. Of that 80, 100, 160, mm-hmm. 400 paintings. You can look it up. 400.
Now, for our listeners, Gary, the name of the winery?
Carmody McKnight, the first, along with Justin, winery in the Central Coast. Wow.
And where I was heading, unmistakable beauty, not opinion.
Oh, but let me finish. I'm sorry. I interrupt myself, and then you interrupt my interruption. But I wanted to make it complete. So what, in terms of the beauty as an artist or photographer, I've never seen color, and color is dominated by the sky. And I've never seen or never aware in a photograph or a painting ever where the sky, the crown of the sky, the ultramarine of the cobalt, is the same color as on the horizon. This is something I point out to the many Chinese who have come to here. And I learned later by the scientists that the reason for that is of all the areas in the world, and we're this close to the sea, especially 6-7 miles, we have no humidity, which is the best thing you can do for grape growing. So the lack of humidity is what gives it that whitish grayish.
The haze, the over.
Yeah, horizon. Mm-hmm. You don't have that here.
Wow.
And every, plus the kind of vegetation we have here is all over the map. So when you're looking out at vegetation, when I'm on the East Coast, there is one color. Sorry. You come to my vineyard and it's beyond any palette you could ever think about. That's what beauty is. So you can explain the beauty scientifically, topographically, and so on. It's not just an opinion. I don't have an opinion. My wife was married. She was the most beautiful woman in the world. But then I could explain her beauty. I could show you her legs. I could show you her face.
All the elements were there. And I wanted to lead to amenities after the beauty.
By the way,
I'm glad you...
Are we going too far afield all over the
Well,
place?
I had number three, and you hit on it.
And by the way, when I run for president,
yeah,
I don't want to saying something here that's going to kill me later.
Gary, I'll work with you.
You'll bring it up later. We'll go through this, get rid of anything.
Find these sound bites.
We'll sell it to you later.
A vision, the third rail of tourism. We attract because the beauty, the word's getting out. This podcast goes around the world. People see videos. Their friends go, you've got to see Paso Robles or San Luis Obispo or Rio Grande. And so the message gets out, they come. But to me, it's the people, if the people are not doing well in an area. And I think you touched on that at the very beginning about people lacking. How can you give... How can you be a good tour guide? How can you be a good host if your heart is aching and your health is not in shape? How can you give?
And this is a healthy area to live in. That's one thing. And I think we show that now statistically.
Yeah.
And again, as we say, where would you rather have you go anywhere in the country and ask that question? I'd rather have health than $1 billion. Well, then you should get the hell out of the state you're in. I don't want to name them because then you'll bring that up later. And I'm screwed now.
Let me ask you a question. You worked in several categories. You're an artist, winemaker,
I'm everything.
You're everything.
They call the Renaissance man.
The Renaissance man. Talk to me about your view of creativity. It obviously is applied universally across every area. Talk to me about creativity.
Well, first of all, I think creativity should be fundamental to us all.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're creative, age is your friend, not your enemy. If you're a football player, age is a tough one. But the one thing, I was an art major at UCLA and music. And one thing I noticed that all my heroes, whether it be music or art, even poetry, got better as they got older.
That's right.
Beethoven's 9th Symphony, better than his first. Mozart's 42nd, better than his second.
Mm-hmm.
There are painters that in their youth were terrible, basically, and became brilliant. And so what else do you want to be? What other business endeavor, what other area do you want to put in your life where you're getting crappier as you get older?
Right.
And then where age becomes a fantastic gift.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think right now I can paint better and more aware than ever before.
Yeah, that's right.
And I also would like to be as healthy enough so that I'm not losing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there have been some great painters that actually had dementia, and it got even better that way.
That's a rarity, but it's true.
So, hey, you were voted Renaissance Man of the Year, weren't you?
Yeah, here at the Paso Robles Film Festival. I've kept that title and my plaque.
Well, here, that's excellent. The Digital Film Fest, yeah.
Yeah, right, the first one.
It's always nice when somebody else says it about you rather than saying about
yourself.
So, violinist, you played violin.
Yep.
Yeah. Hollywood Bowl. What was that?
Hollywood Bowl.
What was that?
I was in those days when schools really supported the arts, and you had orchestras and great orchestras and great teachers there. I was in a fantastic orchestra during the high school, and we toured actually California, and we ended up playing. I was first violist actually at that point in the Hollywood Bowl, and so I could get to that point. We were talking earlier that was. I had to make decisions about, do I want to continue as a violinist and practice 4 or 5 hours a day, or be a painter that it seemed I had better gifts for, and paint 4 or 5. You can't do things 8 hours a day. It's hard to be a really fine violinist.
It's a blessing to have all these gifts, painter. But right.
Yeah, you have to pick and choose.
Yeah, so that's the downside of being a Renaissance man.
Right.
So, Gary, now fast forward in our last, 10 minutes here, and we're going to have you back. I mean, we have to have a part two because the time is just rapidly.
Yeah, because I've said nothing yet of importance. I said, all I'm saying is to an audience, what I'm telling you is life or death.
Yeah. No, of importance. That's very funny. Again, how many olive trees do you have?
First on the plant, we have several hundred.
Several hundred, okay.
Wow.
And we can buy olive oil from you.
You better. And I don't want to be self-promoting because...
No, I'm asking because I'm going to come out and buy some.
Or from us, there are two or three other in that area, which is the west side of Paso Robles. Why that area? Very important, if you research this, Tuscan olive trees, has to be limestone, have to be on hills, and it has to have endless sun. If you notice the olive trees green all year, endless sun to get the fine. We have the finest olive oil studied in the world by far. Tuscany now, because of global, bullshit going on here.
Oh, yeah.
They can't even grow. They're losing the crop. It'll never come back.
Ooh.
Tuscan olive trees are over with.
Mm. Wow.
That's how serious all of this is. And a lot of this is serious because, again, we're not paying attention. We're paying attention. If I turn on my TV, I'm paying attention to stuff that will never really affect me.
Well, Gary, if I'm listening to this podcast and I go, gosh, we've never made it to Paso Robles, I want to go visit Carmody McKnight. I want to get the olive oil and the wine. What's number three that people are missing?
As far as...
good food, good eating. If I have some wine, I have some olive oil. What other...
Looking at the sky. Looking at a sky that you'll never see anywhere else.
Night sky.
And day sky. Yeah, by the way, night sky too, but the day sky. Look at that cobalt blue, look at the ultramarine blue. And if you have any creativity, get some paint and paint it.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Well, we could have a whole podcast on your acting career, but we do want to talk a little bit about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, growing up, I mean, I've watched Burke's Law, one of your more popular shows you were in. But for me, I mean, it seemed like it was on after school. I would watch the Irwin Al shows and, Time Tunnel, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, and, of course, Land of the Giants, which you were the star of.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get that gig?
I did a lot of. I was lucky during that period when TV ruled the world. Okay, remember we had three networks and all that. And I was just fortunate. I was offered one series after another. You can't do them all. Even Star Trek, I was offered that.
Wow.
Really? What position? What
Kurt? Well, it was Gene Roddenberry brought me in. A lot of times they don't tell you exactly why they bring you in.
Right.
He brought me in ostensibly for a series called The Lieutenant. And then he kept talking to me about. A space then caught my interest, and then I ended up doing the most expensive series in the history of series with ABC, and it was the Pacific version of Combat, And it was being written by the number one. And so I took that instead. And when you go ahead and do a series, it's going to take a year and a half off your life. That didn't end up getting on the air because the Vietnam War had gone crazy and ABC decided this may be terrible. Mm-hmm. So I missed doing, as I recall, the Star Trek. There was an initial program of Star Trek and it was pretty good, but they didn't go with it and they recast. But anyway, I was just saying that was a time when those series, and I had a shot at usually the best of them.
Mm-hmm. And just how did that lead up for you? Was it knowing some people knowing of you? Just the dynamics. I mean, Lux a bit, but something else is going on.
When they were doing, Irwin Allen was going to do Land of the Giants.
Yeah.
It was going to be, and it was, the most expensive, the most advanced, technically, series in history. Wow. It to this day, it's still the most expensive in those dollars. And then it became, and it holds the record to this day, the most played series in the history of series, if you consider all the countries.
All around
the
world.
Appreciated, popular in other countries, because Land of the Giants was very symbolic of the big, the little, and the giants became, in so many countries, the governments that were pressing them.
And so it resonated with people.
Oh, I'm telling you, you have no idea.
Wow.
No one has how incredibly important. And even to this day, I have the website put together. You're limited to 5,000. I have 5,000 followers.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And they talk a lot about Land of Giants all over the world. I got like another 15,000 or 20,000 that want to, but you can only have 5,000.
Well, you know,
I feel there's more almost intensity about it because people discover this program, whatever they, than ever before because of these attributes.
Right. I've got an interesting question. I was thinking about coming today and being with you. I thought, you know, the collecting props from TV shows is a big deal, but your props were so big, did anybody collect them?
Well, they collected them, and the first Universal Studio tour had them. And if I had my wits about me then, there were two things I should have done. Got all the props and all the games, Land of the Giants, and all the incredible stars in Burke's Law.
Yeah.
I would have sat at least for an hour, had my wife come in, photograph us, and talk, which I never did. And when you have, you got a couple, 1 minute?
Oh, we absolutely do.
Okay,
yeah.
Because I had to bring this in because I have to rattle it off and not go from memory. These are the stars that I got to know, but not anywhere close to enough. And here's a list of them.
I peeked at that. It's crazy.
From John Cassavetes, Dick Clark, Jeannie Crane, Linda Darnell, Zsa Zsa Gabor, Dorothy Moore, Ida Lupino, Basil Rathbone. I'm going to give you that little story.
Now, before you do, this sounds like the Johnny Cash song. I've been everywhere, man. You start rattling off these names.
I was with these people all the time, but at when you're in your 20s, whatever, you have other important things to do than sit and maybe talk with Basil Rathbone. I was doing an art, on and on. So I'll tell you about that.
Okay.
So Basil Rathbone, Sherlock Holmes, as a kid growing up, was my favorite show. I loved that show as a kid. Okay. And so one day I'm coming in to, like every day, to do my work on. And you come in at 7 o'clock or 6:37. I'm sitting in my chair, and right next to me is a gentleman I didn't really recognize. But he was there to somebody over there.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of waiting for this, for that, having coffee, breakfast. I didn't drink coffee at that time. Didn't have enough olive oil. Should have. And the guy is next to me. He's a guy, oldish guy. And, you know, and we just say a couple things, and people come by. And we were there about an hour. Never really had a conversation with him. Just, hey, how's the weather? Would you get in? And blah, blah. Then the assistant producer came by right between us. This was an hour later after having no really contact with this man sitting next to me, not really recognizing him. And he says, Mr. Rathbone, we're ready for you. And as he was getting up, is that Basil Rathbone?
Mm-hmm. Walking away from me.
And you'd been sitting there for an hour. Yeah.
I wish I could have had 1 hour. Now, we have a 1 hour, we're covering a lot of subjects.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I could have had a podcast with him.
Did you ever get to have another contact with him?
No, because what happens, the next day he was here was the day I'm not here. You know, so that was the moment of time when we were both together. I had those moments of time with Gloria Swanson, for instance.
Wow.
And I've just been reading her biography by an incredible writer, Stephen Michael Shearer, who is the ultimate, who, by the way, wants to write a biography of myself. I mean, he's talked about
nice.
It.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
But he, her experience goes back to the late 1890s. I mean, she saw everything.
Mm.
And when I'm reading it, I said, my God, the whole history of film, she observed. And I never had a word about it with her. Yeah. Where the hell was I?
Well, conversely, did you have a mentor?
My experience was, as young, I was very good in doing theater in mm-hmm. high school, but I never take seriously because I'm to be a painter.
Mm.
That was my life. I never mm-hmm. thought I'm going to be in films. And the reason I got in films was a cockamamie thing called Teenage Frankenstein.
Wow. Oh, really?
While I'm in college, some guy comes by and says, hey, and just at that time, the biggest hit ever was called Teenage Werewolf with Michael Landon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy comes by and says, you know, you'd be perfect for this film we're doing, but, you know, one of those things.
Right, right.
And I said, well, I'd like to bring you in, da-da-da-da. And then he's, I said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, we're going to be doing a follow-up, and it's called Teenage Frankenstein. And I thought, oh, my God, Teenage. It was like a porn film at that time. Mm. And so I said, how much? You know, because it, like, I had a couple extra jobs, and he mentioned the price that I'm there.
That's like, it.
Yeah. And so I went in there, got that part. But I still was an artist. I've been doing Teenage Frankenstein. And then I went into the Army. I was one of those people who volunteered to go into the Army, you know,
mm-hmm.
basically a pacifist, but believe I have to do my
mm-hmm.
duty, yeah. unlike some people we know. And so while in the Army, I get a call from an agent actually I had known who helped me arrange that. And he said, when are you getting out, Gary? And he said, because I want to bring you, I have an interview for you at Warner Brothers. And Warner Brothers, and I didn't realize, was doing all of this show. They've really invented what was going to be TV. They had all the series,
wow.
Sunset Strip, Hawaiian, all that. And so I had just gotten married to Miss America.
Mary McKnight.
And I'm coming out without a job.
Well, you were a sex symbol yourself, I got to say.
So I had, and so what, and my hero in life, this is what no one wants, but my hero in life was Van Gogh.
Mm-hmm.
And my next hero was Gauguin. Mm-hmm. And I knew if I was going to be a great painter and well-liked, I would never sell a painting, and I'm going to be a poor ass most of my life.
Bottom line.
And being married to Miss America ain't going to work.
Okay? You can't do that.
Right.
And so it occurred to me at that moment of time going to Warner Brothers, especially sitting out in the office waiting to go in, I said, maybe I better do this because I can probably make a living.
Yes. Yes.
And I'd be a destitute artist.
You almost turned it away. You almost turned it down.
Yeah, and the thing, I'm serious. I was serious about it. When you're 14, 15, 16, that's a serious thing. And even to this day, when people like my art, I get nervous. Maybe I'm not that good. Because my hero, they never liked it. Mm-hmm. Never liked his paintings. Yeah. And his brother had a gallery in Paris.
Theo.
And yeah, and he still couldn't sell his work. And is there a greater, better painter known in the history of man who always will be? There's like 100 books written on him.
My absolute favorite, Van Gogh.
Yeah.
Absolute favorite.
There you go. And yet at his time, you would have hated him. Oh, get this crap out. His mother burned his paintings. They were so bad. Oh. So this is how I grew up.
He burned some of his own paintings for heat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I grew up with the idea that if you're good, no one's going to give a damn and you're going to be tortured.
Mm.
So and at 15 and 16, that's the mindset you have.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that is why I said so. I was totally inundated with this thought, and so again at a tender age, somebody saying, "Hey, by the way, here is a few $1,000s a week, and you can live." And not only that, but you go to the commissary, Warner Brothers, and every star you ever saw there, and you're hobnobbing, and I would have this phenomenal life. Or I go back and I'm painting in some cellar somewhere, and you coming in, and I said, I'll give you this painting for $5. No, it's not worth it. Mm. So it's hard to explain that, but that's when you're young and you've spent all your life painting, which I did, starting at age 4 or 5, I painted constantly. As I said to you, I have, if you look at my website and go to my, I have 400 paintings of the land of Paso Robles. So when you say visitors, if an artist, and I'm pretty good as a painter, is inspired to create 400 paintings of a damn view in the west side of Paso Robles, you ought to come out and take a look at the damn thing.
I love it. I love the fact that you're so straightforward, Gary, and, you know, come and get it. We're definitely looking forward to the next visit to the Slow Good Life. We want to hear...
Yeah, we got to have you back.
What you're
so
doing.
So many stories.
Yeah.
We'll just call it the Fast Good Life.
I got to see Leonard Nimoy do the one-man show for Theo Van Gogh and got to meet him afterwards, autograph the program, where he did that one man play on Vincent Van Gogh. It was amazing.
Yeah, on the show. I hated to have missed that.
Yeah, that was quite good.
I wish somebody bring it back around here because I think people should go see that.
I think that would be great. If anybody's here in this podcast and you have connections to bring that show back, I think it would be rich.
Well, I want to say one more thing about the winery.
I wasn't going to totally close. But,
oh, okay.
So we have a few more minutes. I think Monty will be cool. But I want to say, before we get to that winery, you did one episode, if the internet is correct, with Peter Falk on Columbo.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just, that's one of my all-time favorite TV series.
Yeah, but two brothers, like the Gallo brothers, and I played the corrupt one. I played the one with no principles.
I got to go
back
and look at that.
I played the one that would be glad to put chemicals in the wine if I could sell it.
I got to go. What was it like working with Peter Falk?
Well, it was pretty terrific. And by the way, it's, if you look it up again, it's one of the, it's either like number two, three, or of the one that's the most watched of all the episodes.
Wow. That's neat.
Hey, winery connections. I mean, you know, there's a lot of boutique wines out there and a lot of celebrities putting out their own brands and stuff, but you're the originator. But Fess Parker was another local guy.
Yeah, and he worked, by the way, on both of my shows.
He did.
I knew him very well.
Yeah, okay.
On Burke's Law. And I also did one of his shows because he was at Fox and waiting on the Land of the Giants, they put me on his show. So I got to know him pretty well there.
And he was did you guys
no, we
sip
never had
the wine back then?
I don't think he was into it at that time.
Okay. And then fast forward, the property adjoining your property, this might be a bit controversial, but I got to ask. Justin Winery, did you see any missing oak trees up there, Gary? Is that...
No, you know, not really. And I wasn't too bothered by that anyway. They did a fine job.
Yeah.
We're talking about, they call themselves the Wonderful Company, the Resnicks.
Yeah.
They're worth $4 or $5 billion, the biggest farmers in the country.
Yes.
It's kind of a land of the giants because they're as giant as you can be. They have 160 acres. We have 160 acres. They've done a marvelous job. And it is, and that's why that show was popular. It's just, it's so two different worlds. They're in their world. They've done fantastic in their world. In many ways, I don't understand that world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting story. I was part of the restoration process in that land, in that area.
Really?
They brought us in to reseed the hillsides.
Who's a they, by the way?
Oh, just a company that I was working
for.
Okay,
right.
Yeah, at the time. They brought us out there to we had to roll the seeding. We planted trees out there. That used to be an animal sanctuary where it was, that land that Justin bought. For me,
that was my land.
That was yours?
It was 320 acres.
Oh,
that, when I crash landed, that's the land I crash landed.
Oh, did really?
The paintings I did were both. I sold half to Justin.
Uh-huh.
And then Justin...
Okay.
Became Justin, and eventually Justin sold to the Resnicks, who, by the way, the one thing you have to know is they bought that land because they knew it was the best in the world.
Wow.
When people didn't know, and they bought it because also of the limestone. They knew that. Because if anyone is, I'm telling you this as a given, if you read, anybody out there who actually reads can look this up, in Europe for centuries, now it's a whole different world. You didn't grow a vine unless you were in limestone. The vineyards stopped. And there's a book There's a book, several books on this subject, and you just have to know that. And it's a topography also. You don't ever grow on flat. So Napa, without limestone and flat, and now they're bearing the price of it. So they learned 1,000 years ago what made a great area. And we've forgotten that. Or not only that, we don't read or look. And now we can look up. You don't have to go to the L.A. County Library to read that. You can look up that fact.
Gary, in closing, speaking of—
Are we closing?
Well, we're getting ready to. But maybe just—
Have we started? I thought this is the warm-up.
Yeah, I love it.
Turn the tape on.
I wish so.
Because if it's the real show, I have a whole different voice. That voice.
This is great. Get the camera out. No, I want folks to know your website, CarmenyMcKnight.com.
Yeah.
And then what would you recommend? Maybe throw out a website if they're interested in health and they want to look for some resources.
Yes, for sure. It's called Super Organic Wines with an S.com. You must look at that because what we're talking is life and death. It'll tell you all the chemicals you're drinking. And what's worse about wine than anything else, you better smoke cigarettes and not drink the wine made. Because one of the things also that's incredibly stupid is, and everybody thinks it's so great and wonderful, they put this food product in a brand new wood barrel for 2 to 3 years. And that's what I paint from the chemicals. That's where my turpentine comes from. Why am I going to put my pasta sauce in wood? You see, it makes no sense. But audience out there, you've just paid $500 for a bottle of wine coming from you know where. And we'll say, well, we have brand new oak, and it was in oak for 3 years. So you got an extra 200 toxic, proven carcinogenic chemicals to digest. And that is why, folks, that this country, for the first time in history, for the last 3 years, our life has declined. The life expectancy has declined.
That's significant.
We're the unhealthiest country now in the world. When I was growing up, we're the healthiest.
Yeah.
So we've got to pay attention, not to Iran. They're not going to come and bomb us. I'm sorry. The few immigrants that we have, don't worry too much. My family was an immigrant. My grandfather had to escape a jail to come here.
Yes.
We're not going to. You're killing yourself because what you put tonight in that bottle and you're going to pour in the glass, that is what's going to make you, by age 50, all of you out there are taking five chemicals a day, which they call medicines.
John Lennon summed it up this way. He says, life is what happens to us while we're busy making other plans. So let's live life and quit making those other plans.
Yeah, exactly.
This has been absolutely great. Craig Marshall, Joseph
Goodwin. They were terrific. I love these guys.
These are great guys, man. These are my friends.
Gary,
you know?
We love you, man.
And Gary, really, you're the real deal, man. You are the real deal. Cheers to you for what you're doing and how you're living. And would you please come back on the Slow Good Life?
Yeah, I'd love
part
to do
two.
Because thank you. You guys are great and you're doing very important.
Thank you so much.
You're allowing information to get out there. That's vital.
No violin, though, next time.
It'll be tough.
Okay. All right. Thank you. This episode of The Slow Good Life is brought to you by Slow Talk Podcasting, a turnkey recording studio featuring podcast development, production, distribution, and marketing. Check out Slow Talk Podcasting online at slowtalkpodcasting.com or call them at 805-234-5056.